The next 4 hours. 13. However long most people imagine it takes to chip half a dozen coats of dried paint and a thin overspread of concrete away from the grooved edge that runs around a manhole cover, it was way longer than Teacake and Naomi had figured. If they hadn't found the wide-slotted screwdriver in the tool cabinet, they might never have gotten it open at all. They took turns with the tools. You couldn't strike more than 6 or 7 hammer blows in a row without needing a break from the painful vibrations that shot through your hands, as if you'd just hit an inside fastball with the thin end of the bat. Twice, Teacake hit the screwdriver too hard. He'd thrown both tools down and rolled around on the floor, clutching his palms between his thighs, showing off the breadth and originality of his curse word vocabulary. Naomi was more methodical, aiming her blows carefully and measuring their impact. Her progress was steady and considered, and hers was the final blow, the one that chipped away the last chunk of paint and concrete and made the cover move a fraction of an inch.
"You got it!"
"Get the pry bar," she said. He grabbed it from the closet, wedged it into one of the 4 slots evenly spaced around the circumference of the cover. The metal disc came up with a slight whoosh of decompression as the fetid air from below swapped places with the clean air above. Teacake wedged the bar in farther, pushed down on it as hard as he could, and got the handle end almost all the way down to the floor.
"Stand on it," he told her.
She did, 1 foot at a time, pinning the bar to the ground once all her weight was on it. Teacake wiggled his fingers into the 3-inch gap between the cover and the ground.
"Don't put your fingers in there," she said, but he didn't answer, because they were this far and there was no other obvious, easy way.
Plus, she hadn't said it with much conviction, and he knew that what she really meant was, "Put your fingers in there." But that was okay, because they were on the same page at this point, in it together all the way. He strained like hell, wishing he'd stayed with the chest and upper body work he'd done for 1.5 years at Ellsworth. He would have dearly loved for her to see some of that now, because he had been cut, man, and he'd been really proud of it. It was such a change. He'd been a skinny kid for as long as he could remember. But almost the minute he got out, he felt puffy and ridiculous, so he'd cut out the gym work and hadn't missed it at all. Well, maybe he missed the feelings right after when everything was flowing and you felt sort of happy and angry at the same time. That sensation was cool. But really, if she could have seen him then.
"Although, you know, I don't look that bad now. Was she just looking at my biceps a second ago? Or, oh shit."
His mind had wandered and he was losing his grip. The thing was slipping. He was going to drop it. Teacake dug in, snapped back into the moment, bent his knees and got the cover up past the tipping point. He leveraged it onto its edge and had planned to lay it down the same way he picked it up, but his muscles were screaming at him now.
"Why didn't you do this when we were built for it, asshole?"
As soon as he got it all the way up on its edge, he gave the manhole cover a shove and it rolled away toward the wall. It didn't go far, though. It must have weighed 200 pounds, maybe 250, and after 6 or 7 feet, it started to tilt over and arc back, rolling right toward them. They danced out of the way, absurdly, as the thing chased them for a few feet, pissed off at having been awakened from its comfortable slumber. The metal rim ground across the floor a few inches from their toes, described one last dying circle in the hallway, and very nearly fell right back into the hole it had just been covering. That would have been a scream. It settled like a spinning quarter on a tabletop, making a grinding cast-iron racket, until it finally came to a rest, upside down, just in front of him. When the echo faded, Teacake spoke.
"You know, like, looking back, maybe I could have just slid it to the side a little bit."
"Well, sure, we know that now."
If he didn't love her already, he loved her for not telling him he was a fucking idiot the way his old man would have.
She didn't say much. But when she did talk, it wasn't to give anybody shit, not even as a joke. Naomi picked up the flashlight, the one he'd grabbed upstairs. She clicked it on. They walked forward to the edge of the hole, got down on all 4s, and shined the light down into it.
The light was bright, the batteries fresh, but there isn't much any flashlight can do to illuminate a vertical cylindrical shaft that runs 300 feet straight down into the earth. The metal ladder ran along one side of it. A ton of newly raised dust floated in the stale air, stirred by the removal of the lid, but other than that, there was only the dark. They looked at each other. Neither one of them wanted to back down, and neither wanted to go first. "Climb 50 feet down and then we talk again?" she proposed. "How many rungs is on that ladder?" She shined the light down at the corrugated metal rungs and estimated, 50, probably? Why? I don't know. I was hoping it would help. She shined the light down into the hole again, playing it around the edges this time instead of straight into the black. Some distance below, there was the dim outline of an indentation in the side of the shaft. Too far away to see clearly, but there was at least something there, some kind of goal. "Okay, look, let's go to that thing." "What thing?" "Over here." She gestured for him to come around to her side, and he did, moving up against her on the floor. His leg touched hers, just barely, but he was keenly aware of it. She traced the light beam around the edges of the indentation. "There, what is that? 30 feet, maybe? We'll climb down to that, see what it is." "And then what?" "Then we'll talk. If it's cool, we keep going. If it isn't..." He waved off the rest of her sentence. "I get it." He took the light from her, swung his legs around, and started to climb down into the hole. "You don't have to go first." "I'm a gentleman. I'll go first and shine the light up so you can see." "You have to admit," she said, "so far, this is cool." "So far, I have to admit this is cool." "You really think so?" "No, I'm just repeating what you told me I had to say. See you in 30 feet. She laughed, and he started down into the shaft. Climbing with one hand was harder than he thought, but he was so afraid of dropping the flashlight, he didn't even try to use the other. One hand holding tight on the light and the other clamped in a death lock on the vertical bar of the metal ladder, he broke a sweat within 10 or 15 rungs, more from fear than anything else. Then his mind got the best of him. It started to wander, as it did, and he thought about falling. First a foot slipping off a rung, then his shin banging into it, the painful stretch of tendons as his legs split apart, both hands flailing at the bars, maybe one or two fingers snapping, trying to support his falling weight as his body gained momentum. And then the moment of detachment, the cartoon suspension as his hands flailed at empty space and his feet popped free. Would he scream? Or would he go silent? Would all sound drain away as his eyes popped wide and his mouth opened in a horrified, perfect round O shape, making a soundless plea for help as he began to drop into the darkness, 100, 500, 1,000 feet straight down until he hit the cement floor at the bottom, feet first, his legs accordioning into his body, the long bones slamming upward into his internal organs, his femur or tibia or whatever the big one was, slicing up through his intestines, piercing his heart and driving itself up into the base of his skull. Official cause of death? Man killed by own leg bone. Then another scenario occurred to him, one in which he did not fall free. In this chain of events, one foot wouldn't slip away clean, it'd get hung up in the rungs instead. He'd fall, but his body would flop over backward, bending at the left knee, and he'd hear the ligaments on both sides of the kneecap pop as it wrenched at an unnatural angle, bearing weight and torque it had never been designed to withstand. In this version, he'd scream, all right, shriek like a wounded animal as he hung there, his shredded knee holding him upside down, head banging against the metal rungs beneath him. The flashlight would slip from his hand and fall, the beam throwing crazy, bouncing light over the inside of the shaft as it dropped, finally smashing to bits on the floor far below. Naomi would shout from above and try to save him. She'd climb down 3 rungs, loop one arm in, and lean down as far as she could, flailing for tea cake in the near total darkness. But she'd miss his outstretched hand and lose her own grip. Now she'd fall, and she would fall clean, down 3 feet and right into tea cake. Their combined weight would dislocate his knee and break the tibia of his trapped leg. In both versions, the tibia lost big, and the fractured leg would slither formless through the rungs of the ladder. They'd both pull free. The ending would be pretty much the same as before. It wouldn't be the fall that did it so much as the sudden stop at the end. Except this time, Tea Cake would land upside down and the cause of death would be changed to Man Falls on Head, while hers would read, Woman Dies from Hanging Out with Moron Who Climbed Down a Dark Vertical Cement Shaft with One Hand. Tea Cake's mind hadn't just drifted, it had gone off on a little Wanda yar. But at least it had killed some time, and they'd already gone down 34 rungs, reaching the gray indentation they'd seen from above. Crooking one arm through the rungs, Tea Cake brought his feet together, steadied himself, and turned the light to shine it on the side of the concrete shaft. It's a door. Naomi came down to just above him and looked at it. Three characters, and in retrospect, they didn't have to climb down here to hazard a good guess as to what they said. SP2. She nodded. Yeah, that's what I figured. Wanna keep going? Tea Cake didn't think he'd gotten what he'd paid for yet. He hadn't smashed up his employer's wall, hammered through a cement floor, and vividly pictured two distinct and gruesome versions of his own death so he could stare at a closed door with SB2 written on it in faded black letters. Without answering her, he shoved the flashlight in his pants pocket, still switched on and with the beam pointing upward so it could light her way. With both hands free, he'd move a lot faster. They continued down.